It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Our content partner, Public Source, has investigated the purchase of medications for youth offenders at the state's six juvenile correction facilities over 7 years. What they found was a higher rate of antipsychotics being prescribed than for the state's foster children. So why is it being done? Are they drugged into behaving? And what are the long-term effects on these young people and ultimately on our society? I'm joined now in studio by Public Source reporter Hallie Stockton. Hallie Stockton, good to have you back with us on Essential Pittsburgh. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
You can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is ESSPGH@WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH. So, Hallie Stockton, are these youth offenders being drugged into behaving?
Well, it is difficult to tell because we don't have the ability, because of privacy concerns, health confidentiality, to connect, you know, the medications that are being given to individual kids. But on a statistical higher level basis, we have child and adolescent psychiatrists who are leaders in this field who were very concerned about the levels of prescribing, particularly of the antipsychotics.
Who are these kids and why are they there, first of all?
Sure. These kids are mostly teenagers, teenage boys. More than half of them are Black. About a quarter of them are white. They are coming from all over the state. These are the most chronic or violent youth offenders. They are the ones who every other program in the community hasn't worked for them. They've been in court time and time again. And it's the end of the line. It's, you know, before they get in real trouble that's going to put them into the adult criminal system, this is the last ditch effort here. So they're being sent hours away from their families in most cases to these rural facilities to try. The idea is that they'll be rehabilitated.
And these are violent offenders. These would be classified as the most high risk of the offenders in the juvenile court system.
Yes, in most cases, they're being described as kids who have committed an interpersonal crime, so something where it's affecting another person's well-being. So a lot of assaults are involved, a lot of robberies, often having to do with guns, lots of guns and drug crimes among this population.
So how were you able to confirm that this is happening, that in fact these young people are being heavily medicated and perhaps over-medicated in some cases?
We were able to procure pharmaceutical invoices for 7 years from these state facilities. So those are the orders being put in by each facility for medications on a monthly basis. We use that information to show the volume and the types of medications that were being prescribed. And we were able to compare that to the relatively small population of kids who are in there. It kind of hovers around 300 kids at any given time system-wide. We focus on this population not only because they're state facilities, so we were able to get these records, but because, like I kind of already said, these are the kids at the end of the line. They're in some ways the most vulnerable kids in the system because they're often unnoticed, and really a lot of programs don't know what to do with them anymore.
What's being prescribed?
The antipsychotics are the highest volume of medications being prescribed as far as these psychiatric medications. Antipsychotics like Seroquel and Abilify, you'll see advertised on TV, those are primarily approved for treating schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, severe irritability with autism, very severe manifestations of mental disorder. The issue is that that psychiatrists are saying they're actually being prescribed for off-label reasons, to calm kids down, to make them sleep, to stop them from being aggressive.
How widespread is this?
Well, our data shows that over 7 years, at any given time, you could look at these facilities and there were enough prescriptions ordered to treat 33% of kids with antipsychotics alone. On top of that, we looked at antidepressants, mood stabilizers like lithium, which is kind of an old school treatment for manic disorders, and found that those are also being prescribed at pretty high levels.
So the danger here, as you have reported, is that kids are more vulnerable. The kids at this age, these are mid to upper level teenaged young people. So because they're in this age range, they are more vulnerable to the side effects of antipsychotics.
Yeah, I mean, the kids they're still developing. I mean, even the U.S. Supreme Court recognized this on a federal basis when they took life without parole off the table. They said that these kids, their brains are developing, their bodies are still developing. So they're being plied with these very powerful medications, and they're exposed to these significant health risks, such as rapid weight gain. Some studies show that they can gain 10 to 20 pounds in a matter of a couple months. On a small teenage frame, that's a huge amount. And that's shown to lead to diabetes, high cholesterol, things that will affect them for many decades to come, and have even that can be linked to actually shortening their lives.
And you reported that studies and experts estimate between 50 and 75% of these juveniles have a diagnosable psychiatric disorder?
That's true. That's a general kind of U.S.-wide estimation. And the point is, that's for diagnosable psychiatric disorders. That doesn't mean that those are disorders that are always treated by medication. Not every psychiatric disorder needs a medication. Not every psychiatric disorder needs an antipsychotic, the kind of highest level intervention. That seemed to be actually, though, one of the Pennsylvania Department of Human Services, which operates these facilities, when confronted with our findings, gave us that as reasoning, that this is, we're below that. 50 to 75% have a psychiatric disorder, but we only have X percent actually on these medications.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're talking with Public Source reporter Hallie Stockton, who has done an investigation and has recently published a report looking at the purchase of medications for youth offenders at the state's juvenile correction facilities. And again, what they found was a higher rate of antipsychotics being prescribed than for the state's foster children. We're looking at why it's being done and what it means for these young people and for society in general. You can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. What can you tell us about, or what do you know about these facilities that these young people are locked up in?
We looked at six facilities. Actually, one of them just closed at the end of September. These six facilities are located in fairly rural counties. We're talking about Franklin County, Cambria County, Montour County. Two of them are forestry camps, which means, they're considered secure, even though they're just out in the middle of kind of like a state park, and the trees are looked at as basically the way of keeping them in there because it's just so far out in the wilderness. As for the youth development centers, the other four that we looked at, though, they're kind of described to me, and we weren't allowed to actually go visit these facilities. The state wouldn't allow us. They were described to us by researchers and judges, people who have been there, as kind of having a hospital feel, but just everything is locked. So really sterile. The kids are kept on extremely strict timelines for waking up, meals, school, and they're usually staying for an average of 7 to 8 months in these facilities.
And when it comes to the medications, who's paying for these medications?
Well, when a youth goes to one of these facilities, if they are on Medicaid, their benefits are terminated or suspended. That's just a federal law. So the state and the county that actually sends the child to one of these facilities kind of splits the cost. And by saying that, you know, read taxpayers. Taxpayers mm-hmm. are paying
right.
for
we're,
this.
We are in fact paying for this. And I guess another question that comes up is, what alternatives are there to using drugs?
There are so many different types of therapies, cognitive behavioral therapy. I don't even want to go into all the technical terms, but a lot of just, you know, counseling and other types of lesser drugs, too. Drugs that don't carry as many health risks and quite frankly, aren't as expensive.
So I guess what we want to look at here is the domino effect is... Are the alternatives to drugs not being used because there may not be enough counselors available or people to work with these young people in the facilities as opposed to just saying, here, take this and you'll feel better and we won't have to deal with you?
The lack of staffing is not something we were able to confirm. It was raised as a concern by people who are just generally interested in this topic. Also, a potential lack of training for these types of kind of behavioral issues. From what most of the psychiatrists say is that, you know, these are the meds that are going to be used in crisis because they're going to very quickly work. So counseling takes a long time to work. It's a lot of labor, really, because you have to get the child or teenager in this case to go to counseling over and over again, and you're not going to immediately see an effect. If you're giving somebody Seroquel, you're going to very quickly, within an hour or so, see a difference in mood, a difference in behavior. It's going to quiet the noise.
412-246-2002 to join our discussion with Public Source reporter Hallie Stockton. Let's go to Beth from Greene County. Hi, Beth. You're on Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi there. First of all, I want to do a couple of disclaimers. I don't work with children, and I'm not a medical doctor. I am a psychologist, though, and I see these medications used a lot in my adult clients. And I know that there's a big difference between using the antipsychotics in high doses, which is generally how somebody with bipolar disorder or with schizophrenia gets treated, versus using them in low doses where they're used to reduce anxiety and to improve sleep. And I'm wondering if you have any data on the dosing.
What about that, Hallie? Any data on the dosing?
We do. With every one of our entries, we have dosage levels, and we shared that data because we're not medical doctors either. We shared that data with the leading research psychiatrists on this issue, and he and several others we shared this with looked at the dosing and said these are levels that are not used to treat psychotic disorders. They're 300 milligrams less than what would be expected there. So they were extremely confident that these are dosages that are being used to address sleeplessness and anxiety and aggression.
Beth, thank you for that phone call. Let's go to Carrie, who is in Regent Square. Hi, Carrie. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I was wanting to know whether it was possible to do any examination of billable hours or staffing levels so as to make a determination as to whether the children getting these medications are receiving a regular follow-up and getting neurological workups and getting monitored for some of the permanent side effects like tardive dyskinesia.
So is there a way to analyze the available hours for psychologists?
We weren't able to get billable hours of, in that instance. But, you know, just to kind of give that in a general context, and one of the things that we're going to have an additional story out this week is we were trying to get just even basic information on the doctors who are working with these youths, who are caring for them and prescribing to them. And the state would not release the names of the doctors who are taking care of these kids. So we were unable to really do any thorough examination on who they are, if they are, you know, board certified to work with children, if they have any disciplinary record, if they have ties to the pharmaceutical companies. And so to, you know, that kind of puts it in context that to get billable hours, you know, seems practically impossible to us. And now the state did tell us that that the kids are receiving regular evaluations. There's blood work and physical exams being done, and that updates are being provided to the psychiatrists who work at these facilities.
412-246-2002. We need to work in one more break. We will get to Penny from Jefferson Hills. We'll also take your calls at 412-246-2002. Email ESSPGH at WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH, talking about medicines being prescribed for psychiatric medications being prescribed to delinquent youth in the Allegheny County area. Hallie Stockton of Public Source, our content partner, has investigated this. Her report is, or the first in her series of reports, is out. More to come later in the week. More to come on the program after we take this break. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're talking with reporter Hallie Stockton of our content partner Public Source, who's investigated the purchase of medications for youth offenders at the state's juvenile corrections facilities. I said Allegheny County, but it's actually throughout the state that these corrections facilities have been looked into in terms of the rate that they are prescribing antipsychotics for young people who are incarcerated. And we have folks on the line waiting to join the conversation at 412-246-2002. Let's go to Penny from Jefferson Hills. Hi, Penny. You're on the air with Hallie Stockton.
Paul, I just wanted to say I worked for a community mental health organization. It was called Northern Southwest Community Mental Health, Mental Retardation, Drug and Alcohol, and it's now known as Mercy Behavioral Health. And I was the administrative assistant to the vice president there. So I saw a lot of what went on, and it was all very positive. We had psychiatrists, therapists, counselors all working together as a team, and the focus was on continuous quality improvement. And I don't think there was a big reliance on drugs at all, but I'm sure some drugs were prescribed. But that kind of care is available, and I think if some of these, you know, youthful offenders could be referred to places like that, then they would be getting very high-quality care.
Well, that's an interesting point. And what about the opportunity for some of these young offenders to be referred to places like Penny just described?
Right. Yeah. I mean, in speaking with judges and other officials within the juvenile court system in Pennsylvania, that is the hope. That's the focus, is moving away from these congregate care, secure facilities to the community programs that will address mental health in a more holistic way. I know one of the Allegheny County judges I spoke with said she will try everything possible to divert a kid from going to one of these facilities, because she doesn't want to send them hours away from their families where medications might be the default. She wants to keep the kid in the community and within his or her family to address these issues so that they'll go forward and be a functioning adult.
Penny, thank you for contributing that thought to the conversation. Let's go to Pamela in Penn Hills. Pamela, you're on Essential Pittsburgh. Hi.
Thank you so much for taking my call. My question pretty much is there any data on the actual amount of children who are, or youth, or are being released? Oftentimes as adults, and continue to take the medication. My thought really is this compounding the problem by putting these at-risk youth on these drugs, and then very often they become adults and get to be released and refuse to take the medication. Now they're psychotic on top of maybe in a bad situation because of this lack of drugs that they should not have abruptly stopped. I didn't know if there was any info on that.
Yeah, Pamela, that's an interesting question. Hallie, what happens when the young offenders who have been perhaps, as you are indicating, possibly been over-medicated, go on from these facilities to to be released on their own recognizance and then no longer have people to prescribe not only the medications but just give them advice on how to use them?
Mm-hmm. Well, there are a lot of concerns about this issue because, well, number one, anybody abruptly stops these kinds of medications, that opens up a whole nother can of health problems. On top of that, you know, the state does have for each young offender a kind of a transition plan, it back into the community, back to their family. But oftentimes the family might not be able to keep up with all these new prescriptions when they haven't been a part of these treatment plans. The young person may not want to be on these medications at all. And so that kind of resistance is a problem, and they're not going to always make it to the doctor's office for to refill prescriptions or to possibly get counseling. I know that the Mental Health Association in Pennsylvania, which operates some advocacy programs for these kids, are looking into the possibility of trying to create a program where they will follow up with these teens to make sure they're getting the help that they need, and maybe if they do want to get off the medications, try to find them alternatives to address any mental health issues.
Thank you, Pamela. We'll take one more call from Andrew in Robinson Township. Andrew, welcome to the show. Well, we don't have Andrew. We're getting tight on time anyway, so sorry about that. So, Hallie, you say that there has been no thorough examination in the state or the nation on prescribing psychiatric medications to delinquent youth.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's something that the focus has been on foster care since the feds have been really interested in the foster care population, which is a much larger population in the country. So that's understandable. Most of the other looks at this are just that. They're kind of point in time looks, or they're kind of like our analyses where we're missing some key information, attaching this clinical information to specific kids. So it's something that is really being overlooked, and it's why we wanted to shed some light on it to hopefully have some stakeholders in this in juvenile justice issues look at it further and try to move that forward.
And you know, as we go forward, what are the things that the questions that the public should be asking? You know, what kind of red flags does this raise for people?
I mean, the public, they're the ones who are paying for these meds. So and we all have an interest in protecting children. So they need to be asking the important questions about, you know, why are these being prescribed? Are they being overly prescribed? And who is being held accountable for this? Who's responsible to supervise this?
And part two of your series, part one was just released yesterday. Part two comes out Wednesday, and the concluding part on next Sunday.
Yes, sir.
Hallie Stockton has been our guest. She is a public source reporter and has looked into and investigated the purchase of medications for youth offenders at the state's juvenile correction facilities. Hallie, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And we will have our conversation with Pitt's Director of Jazz Studies, Jerry Allen, on Errol Garner's concert by the Sea, the 60th anniversary, later in the week. Until tomorrow, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Thanks for listening. So long for now.